Today we are discussing the paper by Bigley et al. Titled Natural Killer Cell Function is Impaired During Long-Duration Spaceflight in the Journal of Applied Physiology. Taking part on this podcast, we have Dr. Richard Simpson representing the authors and Dr. Glenn Davison, who is an external expert. My name is Benjamin Miller, and as the associate editor who handled the peer review, I will moderate the discussion. Dr. Simpson, please provide a brief summary of the project, including the hypotheses tested and the novel findings.
We were interested to find out if the immune system is compromised at all during long-duration spaceflight missions. And up to this point, we knew that there were some changes that happened to the immune system in response to space travel, but unfortunately, these earlier studies were limited to very simple pre- and post-flight measures. So essentially, a blood sample was collected from astronauts before they went to space, and another sample was collected when they returned from space. And of course, there were many, many changes that were occurring to both arms of the immune system. So we saw changes in the function of the innate immune system and changes in the function of the adaptive immune system. But one of the main limitations of this work is that we did not know if the changes were occurring during spaceflight or whether it was just due to the stresses associated with landing back on Earth and then the astronauts having the challenges of readapting to Earth's environment. So what we really wanted to do in this study was collect samples from astronauts when they were on the space station. And then we also wanted to collect samples from a mission of longer duration compared to the shuttle missions, which tended to last about 14 days. So with an ISS mission, the astronauts are up there for approximately 6 months. And what we were able to do here was schedule our sample collections with the Soyuz space vehicle undocking the space station. And then they were able to return the samples back to Earth where we could analyze them. So we focused on natural killer cells because it hadn't been done before. And natural killer cells are very important cells for antiviral immunity. And they're also very important cells for tumor surveillance. So viral reactivation and cancer are identified as being two risks to astronauts during prolonged spaceflight. So we wanted to see if the function of these cells was compromised in any way. So we collected samples from astronauts when they were on Earth before they went to the space station. We collected two samples, one 180 days before launch and another about 60 days before launch. And then we were able to collect two blood samples on the space station and have these returned to Earth for analysis. So we collected one about 90 days into the mission. So this was about halfway through the mission. And then another blood sample was collected just before the astronaut returned to Earth. And then we also collected four samples when the astronaut returned to Earth to look at the kinetics of the immune system recovery afterwards. Concomitantly with that, we also collected samples from controls on the ground. So these samples were collected at the exact same time. The blood samples were drawn from the astronauts in space and they were processed in the exact same assay. So it was really to serve as a control for any changes that we might see over time or changes that we might see in assay performance or sample age and so forth. And what we really found from the study is that the function of the natural killer cells dropped quite remarkably in the ISS crew members. So we saw that the function had dropped by approximately 50%, and that was compared to both the astronauts' pre-flight samples and also the samples we collected from the control subjects. And the recovery of the natural killer cell function did occur when the astronaut returned to Earth, but during the flight phase of the mission, it was impaired. We also decided to look at different differences between experienced astronauts, whom we call veterans. So these were defined as astronauts who had been to space before, either on a shuttle mission or a previous ISS mission. And we compared them to the astronauts who had never been to space before. And what we found is the astronauts who had never been to space, whom we called the rookies, their drop in NK cell function was more marked.
Thank you, Dr. Simpson. Dr. Davison, you're an expert in immune function. What was your take on this paper? And specifically, what are the major strengths of the work?
For me, the main strengths of this work are the fact that it's actually taking samples or collecting samples and making measurements on the target population, on the population of interest in a real world scenario for those individuals. So in many areas of physiology, we often can't study the target population in their real world environment. And we often try to simulate or mimic that in some way or make measurements that we can translate, whether that's in vitro measures or in animal studies. But the major strength of this paper was the fact that the population of interest were astronauts and the measurements were actually made on astronauts, but actually in a real space mission. That's a major strength. In addition, the fact that the measurements were also made during, or there was samples obtained during the mission as well, which is better than many of the previous studies where it was just pre and post. And then the other strength is the controlled comparisons that were in this study. So again, many other studies, we are limited to just having pre versus post in the same cohort of individuals. But those studies, it's difficult to know if, for example, with the spaceflight, if it's actually the spaceflight per se, or if there's other confounding factors which are causing the changes that we observe. So by having both the during and the post measurements, and also having the control group comparison, we can be more certain with these findings that it is actually the spaceflight and the mission per se that is causing these changes. So I'd say they are the major strengths of this particular paper.
Thank you. Dr. Simpson, what is it about spaceflight that challenges the immune system? We can imagine that there's some psychological stress, but is there other things unique to spaceflight that challenges the immune system? And was there a previous history of flight missions that became compromised due to immunocompromised astronauts?
Yeah, so you mentioned stress. I mean, stress is believed to be one of the main factors that contribute to immune system impairment during space travel. I think with the data we have in the present paper showing that the rookies had greater decrements in function could allude to a potential stress-induced factor. But there are many, many other factors associated with the spaceflight environment that can impair immunity. So radiation is probably the main one. There are major concerns that radiation can cause damage to the immune cells. It can cause damage to the bone marrow, which would therefore impact the production of new immune cells. There's also issues with microgravity itself. We are doing some experiments in our lab at the moment, just looking at microgravity in isolation to see what that does to natural killer cells and other cells of the immune system. And there's also evidence that the gut microbiome is changing in astronauts during spaceflight. And we know that the microbiome and the immune system are very intricately connected. But then other things like circadian misalignment and altered nutrition and physical deconditioning, we know that bone loss and muscle loss is a major problem for astronauts, and these factors will undoubtedly have an impact on the immune system. Regarding previous incidences or evidence of immunocompromise in astronauts, but again, all of these data that are currently available are based on suborbital spaceflight missions, so either shuttle missions or ISS missions, but we don't really know what's going to happen when astronauts start embarking on exploration class missions that go beyond the Van Allen belt, you know, so that is a challenge in itself. And what we're really trying to do is extrapolate what we're seeing on the space station to longer duration missions when the astronauts are going to be exposed to even more challenges.
Thank you, Dr. Davidson. When reading this work, did it provide any insight from other areas of immune function that you're involved with? Could some of these findings help inform preliminary measures or in-flight countermeasures to prevent loss of immune function?
Absolutely. I think some of the interesting findings from this study are the mechanistic insights and the extra measures that were added to try and understand the reasons behind these changes and mechanistically what's causing these changes. One of the things that I found really interesting in this study was to try and understand if it was systemic factors, if it was stress responses and the various systemic factors that you see increasing or being released in response to different types of stress, in order to try and understand if they were causing some of these changes. One of the things that the authors did in this study was they incubated samples or cells with blood or with plasma from different time points within the study. So you would have had, for example, in one of the time points, you might have had an increase in all of these stress markers, which traditionally we believe are causing the changes in immune markers and in immune function. And they incubated those with fresh cells or pre-cells to see whether simply exposing those cells to that environment caused these changes. And what was really interesting here was that it didn't seem to change the markers. So what that suggests to me is that some of the traditional stress responses and the systemic changes that we see in various stress markers, like, for example, cortisol and other things that we traditionally thought were causing these changes, here in this study, it seems that they're not the things that are responsible. So it's something else, and something else to do with the spaceflight per se. So I think that provides a really interesting preliminary finding, what we know is what's not causing or what's not making a big contribution to these changes. So we still don't know necessarily with great certainty what is causing it, but it certainly allows us to rule one thing out, which means in terms of interventions that would target preventing this or a countermeasure to try and overcome this, then we know that it might not be as beneficial to target the traditional stress pathways that we often target with, for example, nutritional interventions, and maybe we need to think about a different pathway. So I think that's what we can learn from this, or it's certainly one of the things we can learn from this in terms of what might be optimal countermeasures in order to try and overcome some of these changes.
Thank you. Dr. Simpson, obviously you are intimately related with the conduction of the study, and you mentioned the limitations of previous studies and how that was facilitated with returning of samples in this study. Can you give the listeners some more insight into the logistical challenges and what limitations that hopefully you'll be able to overcome in the future?
Just before I'll do that, I'll add on one or two things that Dr. Davison mentioned in relation to your first question. So your first question was asking how can we try and figure out what these changes mean clinically, and I think that is an excellent question. So although we see a 50% drop using an in vitro assay of NK cell function, you know, what does it really mean, and does this translate to any clinical risk for the astronauts? What we are trying to do at the moment, and this is a study that's being led by immunologists at NASA Johnson Space Center, and what they're doing is they're taking these immune-based assays that they measure routinely in astronauts, and they're running the same assay in clinical patients on Earth. So these would be patients that have shingles, or patients that have leukemia or multiple sclerosis or some autoimmune disease like lupus or rheumatoid arthritis. And then what they're trying to do is see if these changes that they're seeing in astronauts get to levels that are akin to what we might see in some of these patients as a way to try and aid interpretation of these particular experiments. There was one recent study that I'm aware of, and usually when we measure viral reactivation, we collect saliva samples or urine samples, and the virus that causes shingles is the varicella zoster virus. So we measure varicella zoster virus, or VZV DNA, in the saliva of the astronauts, and in many, many instances, we've found that this is elevated. And when one of my colleagues, Satish Mehta, at NASA Johnson Space Center, compared the amount of viral DNA in the saliva of astronauts with actual shingles patients who had a rash, you know, with blister and all the other symptoms that go with having shingles, the astronaut viral DNA was at the lower end of what we would see in shingles patients. So again, we're seeing this subclinical reactivation for the most part in astronauts, but they are getting to levels that are akin to what we might see in patients that have overt shingles on Earth. Regarding the logistical issues, there are many, many logistical challenges we have to overcome collecting viable samples from astronauts. One of the obvious challenges is just microgravity. So all the things that we take for granted on Earth in terms of collecting samples becomes an extreme challenge in space. Even when it comes to collecting a simple saliva sample, for example, the gold standard method of doing that on Earth is just to have people drill passively into a container so that we can measure various things in saliva. But because there's no gravity, then the astronaut can't passively drill. So we have to look at using different swabs and different methods of collecting saliva in space. And then, of course, there's not much equipment up there. It's not like we have a flow cytometer on the ISS or we have a plate reader. So pretty much everything we do, we're relying on samples being collected on the space station and returned to Earth for analysis. So with this particular study, the astronauts that we recruited are probably involved in 20 other studies. So we have to make sure that what they're doing for these other studies is not going to compromise the data that we're collecting and vice versa. So for that reason, when we collected blood samples and saliva samples from astronauts, we made sure we got this first thing in the morning before they participated in any exercise or they did any other activities for some of these other studies. And because we really wanted to look at live cells, it's impossible at this moment in time to isolate immune cells from the blood on the space station. So we had no choice but to have these samples returned to Earth so we can isolate them and do the assays that we had to do. But unfortunately, as soon as you take blood out of the body, then cells will inevitably die. So we had to schedule our sample collections with the Soyuz space vehicle returning to Earth. And what this allowed us to do was physically retrieve the samples from the International Space Station in our lab within about 36 hours of them being drawn.
Dr. Davison, where would you like to see the future research in this area proceed?
I think a really interesting area to study further is to actually experimentally test some of the theorized or proposed countermeasures. So there are a lot of potential countermeasures. There are ones that we know about from other related fields, such as exercise immunology, but not many, if any, of these have been studied in this particular context. And there's a number of different countermeasures or interventions that could be studied. So I would love to see more research and more studies actually testing these different interventions in a study similar to this, where they're actually done with real astronauts during real missions, to see which ones do actually work as we expect and which ones are maybe less useful. Just going back to the other question, in terms of future directions, this one's a little bit blue skies, if I may, because I'm not sure if it's even possible. But what would be really amazing is if some of the limitations that Dr. Simpson mentioned with actually collecting samples and doing this kind of study is appropriately treating and storing those samples and appropriately transporting them back to Earth as quickly as possible. And we're looking at around about 36 hours, best case scenario. So if ever there was a possibility, or if ever the technology was developed in the future whereby some of these measurements could actually be done in space, they could actually be done on the craft, then I think that would overcome one of the main challenges. So again, it might not even be feasible or possible, but or it might not even be something that the various space agencies or the various tech companies who are involved are even interested in developing. But for me personally, as a exercise immunologist interested in this area, if we ever got to that stage, then that would be a really amazing future development.
I will wrap up this discussion of this fascinating work. It brings to mind some of the logistical challenges of these flights to Mars and flights to other destinations that perhaps we don't see all the time in popular press coverage. It is amazing work with logistical challenges handled very well by Dr. Simpson and his team, as well as others at NASA. I'd like to thank Dr. Simpson and Dr. Davison for their expert input, and I encourage everybody to read the article, Natural Killer Cell Function is Impaired During Long Duration Spaceflight, in the Journal of Applied Physiology.